And good evening, everybody. Welcome to Hoops HD's Under the Radar Floor Cam Edition.
Floor cam.
I am your host, Chad Sherwood, coming to you from the floor of my, right under my desk here. joining me tonight, first of all, David Griggs. David, how are you tonight?
Whoever came up with that idea should never, ever be allowed to come up with any more ideas ever again. That was terrible. But yeah.
Wow. It's our Hoops HD Floor Cam edition.
I mean,
about the same view you got that Michigan-Ohio State game last night, isn't it?
It was unwatchable. If you offered me free floor seats to any basketball game ever, I wouldn't take them because of that game.
Also joining us, John Stalica, joining us tonight for Under the Radar. John, welcome back to Under the Radar.
Oh, good to meet you guys again. I wish we were coming here under slightly happier circumstances for some of our bubble teams, as you'll see later on.
What a week of carnage. Oh, my God. And it all started, really, the day after last week's show. We'll get into it.
Yeah, I don't know if we kind of cursed everybody or something. And by the way, I am back. I've decided to cancel Floor Cam, which is what ESPN should have done 2 minutes into the show last night. But
agreed.
They did not. Wow, we've got a lot to talk to, and I think we are in the process of killing any hope for any at-large bids for maybe all of our 23 under-the-radar conferences, or almost all of them. But let's start by doing what we like to do every week, which is defining under the radar. And I guess maybe it's my turn to do it this week.
I believe so. I'm watching Duke in North Carolina. I don't think that qualifies, but Chad, why don't you clarify whether or not that would qualify?
Now, Duke and North Carolina is not under the radar because these teams have made a lot of NCAA tournaments. Although, David, did you know that they never actually played each other in the NCAA tournament, despite the fact that they were only 8 miles apart?
No, I did not know that. I mean, I heard that at the top of the show twice, actually, already. And wow, that's fascinating.
It is. It's one of the most fascinating pieces of information I've heard tonight. I just don't think I ever heard it before.
Right.
But let's turn under the radar. What under the radar means is teams from the 23 conferences that are not what we consider the standard multi-bid conferences, which are the power conferences of the ACC, Big Ten, Big 12, Pac-12, SEC, along with the Big East, which for basketball purposes I guess would also be considered a power conference, even though not for football. They don't play football anymore. Also, the American, the Atlantic 10, and in most years the Mountain West are standard multi-bid conferences. None of those conferences are under the radar. We also have two additional qualifiers. You cannot be in the top 25, which right now the entire top 25 is composed of teams from those other nine conferences, so that doesn't matter at the moment.
Right.
And you can't be a national brand school, which there's two of them, Gonzaga and BYU. Those two teams are both out as well. Everybody else is fair game, though.
Correct.
Including Wichita State, who we are once again welcoming you back to Under the Radar.
Yes.
I think the second or third time we've welcomed them back this year, but they are back. We like to start every week, though, by focusing in on one conference. And, John, I know you're wearing your Xavier gear tonight, but when you were with us Monday night, you had your NJI T-shirt on. So we decided that we're going to go with that your conference that you were supporting there, with the Atlantic Sun. Bit of a crazy thing. Some crazy things have been going on in the ASUN the past week, though. And that's one of the reasons we do want to focus in on them. John, you want to give us your thoughts on this conference overall?
Yeah, suddenly we've gone to a three-way tie here because we've had North Florida and Jacksonville going back and forth. But after the Highlanders, last year's team of the people, was able to knock off Florida Gulf Coast, they've been able to get into a three-way tie for first, and they're also a game up on Florida Gulf Coast and even Lipscomb, who, amazingly enough, still have a shot for the top seed as well.
Yeah, and here are the standings up on the screen right now. And again, our good friend, who we believe will be finally joining us tomorrow, it's been too long, he's been real busy coaching, but Warren Nolan, this is his site, warrennolan.com, that's where we get all of our graphics from. You notice that five teams are separated by just one game, and then you have a sixth in Kennesaw State that's just another game behind that. And the reason why this is so exciting is because this conference does it correctly. It's played at campus sites, which gives a lot of stakes to the remaining games that have yet to be played. Now, one of the things what we're getting into, and John already touched on this, what in the hell has happened to North Florida? I mean, this was not gradual. This was not something that came on slowly. This was just a 180. They went from being outstanding, rolling through everybody, to losing three in a row, losing bad to bad teams.
Four in a row. This team was 7-0 in conference, undefeated. Lost that home game to Stetson that we just thought was one of those strange losses, but we kind of wrote it off as one of those baffling losses. They got blown out at Gulf Coast, blown out by 10 points at Kennesaw, lost by 7 at Lipscomb over the weekend. Four straight losses, and they are just – they're not even looking good in these games. And not like there's somebody hurt. It's just been a just a collapse here by the Ospreys. And, we've been praising Matt Driscoll for about a year and a half, 2 years now, and I don't know what's happened.
And NJIT is going to be one of the teams that's going to be knocking on their door in the upcoming weeks. So NJIT actually finishes their season with three road games against – North Florida, Jacksonville, and I think USC Upstate is the other one.
I believe that's a that might be a home game, but I'm double checking on that. But
no, it's on the road.
It is on the road. But one of the interesting things with the ASUN, this is actually going to be the first conference that completes its regular season play, which will be next Thursday night. Amazingly, three games left for everybody. One come tomorrow night, Saturday, and next Thursday. So. By the time we're back for our next Under the Radar, we are going to almost know exactly what's going on with this conference for its conference tournament.
And a real exciting week coming up for it. But you have teams, like John mentioned, NJIT, and another one, Jacksonville. You have them just, although they're tied in the standings right now, just going in drastically different directions. Jacksonville's lost two in a row, so there's that. But they had won five straight before that. But NJIT really coming on strong lately. And then how about Gulf Coast turning it around a little bit?
Yeah, well, I mean, NJIT, five straight wins now, the only team winning in the conference. And like we said, tomorrow night at North Florida and then at Jacksonville this weekend, they sweep those two games. They probably win the conference regular season and get to host the entire conference tournament, which is something we were rooting for heading into the season, but we pretty much had written it off about 3 weeks ago.
Right. Also keep in mind that no one has clinched a first-round home game yet since we do have on-campus sites for the entirety of this tournament.
Right.
Yeah. This is a very minor, but there's additional upside to winning if you win the outright regular season championship in this conference. If somehow miraculously Stetson wins the conference tournament, they are on an APR ban list, the outright first-place finisher, if there is one, we'll get the automatic bid. So you can win the automatic bid two different ways if you win the conference, right?
Sure. Now, all Stetson has to do is win three straight road games against teams that are clearly better than they are. But, anything is possible.
but, Stetson and Upstate, really the only two teams that are completely out of it at this point, I'd say. And we're a week and a half away from the end of the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
But on that note, I guess let's go back, and we'd like to go through all the conferences in alphabetical order, the Atlantic Sun being the second conference we normally get to that way, but we're just going to jump back to the America East and then move forward from there. And it's over for the Stony Brook undefeated regular season here. They went down at Albany tonight in what we knew was going to be their toughest conference game. Really weren't in the game very much at all.
No, and a win would have actually the worst they'll do is tie for it with just two remaining games. A win tonight would have clinched outright first place in the conference and home court advantage that comes with it. Albany pretty good at home this year. This was a real good test for Stony Brook, and the reason why it was so big to get home court advantage is because Albany undefeated at home this year, so I thought Stony Brook was going to go down there and do it, but I'm not completely shocked that they didn't. It really, in my opinion, doesn't change my opinion of them. I don't think it really hurts them that much. I think their ceiling was the 13 line, and even had they won out, they were still possibly looking at the 14. So I still like this Stony Brook team. That was just a hard game to win tonight.
In some ways, I think their win against New Hampshire was even more pivotal over the weekend, and that was another game where they had to survive despite some poor shooting in the final minutes, but got a pretty critical block in the closing seconds to preserve a home win over the Wildcats.
Yeah, and Jameel Warney's been having an amazing season with Stony Brook. He's the one that came up with that block in the last second there. Yeah. Really keep an eye on this guy, especially if this the team does make it into the NCAA tournament. He's going to be a player that could affect a game and give probably going to be a four seed, a nice run for their money.
Right. Do you think they can get up to the third? I realize that we'll look at this tomorrow, but do you see them landing as high as the 13 line if they win out this Stony Brook team?
I think they may need somebody that's looking slightly ahead of them to get upset in their conference tournament, but you've got to figure that teams in the like of out of the Mid-American, the Colonial, your maybe even a team like Little Rock, if they lose in the Sun Belt tournament, get left out. If that happens, a couple of those teams get knocked down, that's when Stony Brook maybe be able to sneak into that 13 line. If form kind of holds in all these other top under-the-radar conferences, I think they may end up at the top of the 14 line. Even then, it's still a scary matchup for a three seed. But
oh, yeah, it is. And it's odd that and we bring this up. I mean, obviously, ideally, you want to be inside the bubble because you don't have to want to rely on that automatic bid. But they're going to be helped out by the fact that it is at campus sites. They haven't lost a conference game at home, haven't lost any conference games prior to last night. And the other thing is, it's odd that we don't see at least one 13 or 14 seed win. I don't even recall a year where at least one or 13 or 14 did not win a game.
I think if we're talking about auto bid winners, I would probably say Akron, UNC Wilmington, South Dakota State, Hawaii, and Yale would probably have the best shot to overtake the Sea Wolves. So even if they don't get the 13, I can't see them going below the 14.
Oh, they won't go below.
There's no way that this team is below the 14 seed. I would say the only unless I'll throw in there is should they lose their last two regular season games, which are at one of them is at Maine, the other one's a home game against Vermont, and then win the conference tournament. You know, you've now got a couple of blemishes on the record that could possibly drop you down below the 15 line if everybody else holds form above them. But even then, it may not be enough to drop them below the 14 line.
Right.
Let's go over to the Big Sky, keep things moving here, where it seems like we just kind of do the same thing every week. Say, oh, yeah, Montana, Weber State leading the way. Everybody, no one else is really in it, and these two teams haven't played yet. And I think we're going to just say kind of the same thing this week unless let me start with you, John. Any other comments about the Big Sky?
Well, I wouldn't talk about the top, but I would also talk about the bottom of the conference where we look at last year's CIT finalist. Northern Arizona is going to be a candidate for the Centenary Award this year. You want to talk about a precipitous fall from grace.
Yeah, they were up there for a while. They've now picked up, I think, two wins, including a road one, which probably disqualifies them from winning the award, They would, if we did a top 10 centenary, they would definitely be there, I think.
Right. And just real quick on this conference, Chad, if you don't mind. Montana and Weber State appear to be better than everybody else. They're running away from everybody else, and they haven't played yet.
Thank you, David. Let's go on to the Big South. Conference we spoke about the Big South last week, that it looked like we were finally going to have a year where somebody just runs away with the Big South and things collapsed, and they are still collapsing here. We now have five teams within game each other in the loss column here, from Winthrop, Asheville, Coastal Carolina, High Point, and even Liberty. Whoa. We haven't mentioned all season, has suddenly snuck into the thick of things here.
Well, Liberty did not manage a single out-of-conference win, and they really didn't look that good when conference play began. But here they come, seven wins in a row. They were 2-15. They are now 9-15. That's why we weren't mentioning them. They were 2-15.
I just didn't even realize that they were 2-15. They started conference they were 5-15 overall, but three non-D1 wins in non-conference play. January 2nd, they were on the Centenary Award list because they had 0 wins against D1 competition. We are now sitting here talking about the chance they could be the one seed in the Big South.
Oh, brother.
It wouldn't be the first time we've had some craziness in the Big South as far as first place and the difference between ninth and tenth place.
I'll tell you, the remaining schedule, home against Radford, home against Presbyterian, at Asheville, home against Gardner-Webb. 3 out of 4 of those, they could easily win.
Could. And Liberty has won this tournament before. I think they finished 9th or 10th one year. I know they had to win 4 games to do it, and I believe they entered the NCAA tournament with just 11 wins. So they entered championship week with 7 wins and made the NCAA tournament.
This may be one of the most amazing mid-season turnarounds I can remember, if they actually, especially if they can win the Big South regular season title. We may be talking a lot more Liberty the next couple of weeks. Pay attention, everyone.
Yeah, but they weren't even being discussed by us until now. That's what's remarkable. We weren't talking about them.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to amend my top 10 list for tonight and add Liberty on here. But let's go over to the Big West here, where we did finally get our first Hawaii-Irvine matchup. We have our rematch coming up actually Saturday night at Irvine. Hawaii took the first one and now has sitting here with a 1-game lead over Irvine and 20-3 overall.
Yeah, Hawaii, and again, I don't know how late you stayed up, but Hawaii was so far ahead of them. You know how bad it was? I turned it off.
It gave me an excuse to dust off this Hawaii shirt from the closet.
Oh, look at that!
We've got a costume change here mid-show. Yeah. Stalika bringing it.
Yeah, he really is.
All right, I think I can let John host the next conference. John, go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, so needless to say, one of the big wins that Hawaii had earlier this week, besides Fullerton, was the round one of the Irvine rivalry. So got to stay up late for that one, and we'll be awaiting the rematch in California within the next couple weeks.
It's coming up Saturday night, actually. So they're pretty close to each other for some reason. But yeah. Hawaii, David, though, 20-3 overall. They went out to the conference tournament. Is there any reason to discuss them in terms of an at-large bid?
I think we discuss them. It's just that I just don't think their paper is going to be there simply because of the lack of production out of conference. I could make a case for them if I really had to. In fact, I might end up making a case for them depending on how weak the bubble is. But as far as winning the automatic bid goes, a team that is really playing well, with the exception of their home game against Cal Poly that they had to sweat out. How about Long Beach? They went to Hawaii. To give you an idea, Irvine appeared to be the second-best team in the conference by far, maybe the best team. They go out to Hawaii and get absolutely thwacked. Oklahoma goes out to Hawaii, has to sweat out the win. Long Beach goes out to Hawaii and absolutely pile-drives them. And they've won 5 in a row. How hot is Long Beach? I'm starting to think I realize that they're nowhere near the bubble. They might be playing as well as anyone in the conference all of a sudden.
Well, they played a really crappy non-conference schedule.
Yes.
Non-conference strength of schedule one? That must be a typo. They must have meant 300, right?
Yeah.
Another killer schedule by Dan Munson there out at Long Beach. They do host Hawaii, so I don't think Hawaii can win out because having to go to Irvine and to Long Beach before the end of the season, I can't see Hawaii getting through those 2 games undefeated.
Yeah, but because of who they've played so far in the Big West, the Gauchos of Santa Barbara actually have the tougher overall strength of schedule as compared to Long Beach right now. So that's one reason why we have a big gulf between the top 3 teams as well as the bottom 6 in the Big West.
Yeah, and again, pulling up Hawaii here, if you look at their paper, categorically, the strength of schedule and the RPI keep them out, and I realize that I always say you can't look at things categorically. If they win out, you're talking about winning at Irvine, winning at Long Beach, and having just 3 losses. Yeah, I think you look at them. I don't think they get in, though. Well, what do you think?
I don't think they get in because you've got to remember if – that they will have lost another game in the conference tournament,
right?
To Irvine or Long Beach in the championship game, presumably. And really, if they don't make it to the conference championship game, it's going to be another really bad loss. I just don't think when you could talk about a 4-loss team that play nobody getting any consideration. I can maybe see the argument for the 3-loss team, but even then I look at Murray State last year and I say, this is a Murray State 2015 profile to me. Really,
yeah. The Big West is not a conference where chalk holds up during the conference tournament.
Hardly ever, it seems.
Now, the other thing for Hawaii, they really need to get into the tournament this year if they want to, because next year they will not be in the tournament. they have been given a probation, a postseason ban for next year. But again, next year, not this year, Louisville. Colonial, let's keep moving here. UNC Wilmington now sitting here at 20-5, two game lead in the conference. And David, you and I discussed most of the season that if somebody could run away with this conference and win it by a couple of games, that team would probably be on the bubble and maybe even could get into the field if they messed up in the conference tournament. But we just didn't see any way it would happen. I think we got to take it back here. Somebody's doing it.
Yeah. Now, again, it isn't – when you look at their overall profile, this is a team that didn't have one of the stronger cases out of conference. As you can see there, no real notable wins. The win at East Tennessee State is all right.
Top 100 wins. Only one top 100 game. It was a loss, a well-played game, but a game they lost at Georgetown.
Yeah, and that was a game where they fell behind big but came back and almost stole it. But, I mean, this is a team that is unbelievably hot right now. I mean, I think they've won 11 or 12 in a row. And they've gone to James Madison, not easy to play, to Hofstra, not easy to win there. I mean, not only have they been winning, they've been winning against teams that are tough to beat on the road. And, you know, they go back to William and Mary. That one's not going to be easy, but I think this team will win out based on how they've been playing. And if they do, a case can be made for them.
Let's talk tomorrow night at William and Mary. That may be the deciding game as to whether or not they can win out. If they win that one, only one more road game. It's at Charleston, Hofstra, and Towson at home.
Yeah.
But again, it's going to be a killer conference tournament because I think that there are seven, maybe eight teams, because Elon's not that awful, that can win this conference tournament. And once you get to the quarterfinals, I think it's anybody's game there.
Right.
I'll throw a hypothetical out for you for William and Mary based on their possible road to the conference tournament. Let's say they beat James Madison, UNC Wilmington, and Hofstra, depending upon how the tiebreakers play out. That would be three top 100 RPI wins, which is something you would never see in the Colonial. What kind of a seed do you think they could get if they're able to pull something like that off?
Oh, 12, 13. I think they're right up among the top teams that aren't inside the bubble.
I think the same argument could be made for Wilmington, for Hofstra, for James Madison, for William & Mary, that any of those four teams especially win this conference tournament, I think they're at least on the 13 line and could sneak into the 12. I that's how strong I think the Colonial is this year. And again, it's going to be interesting. Wilmington may be one of those teams that nobody's really talking about. If they do win out to the conference tournament final and lose there, that suddenly everybody's like, why the hell did the committee select them? Where did that come from?
Well, you got to look. They're an outright first place finisher, which gets them on the board, which means they have to be voted out.
They win out, it's going to be by three games because they're going to play Hofstra again, so they're going to win the conference by three games.
Yeah, their RPI 60s. I mean, we've seen it would probably be in the 50s by then. We've seen outright first place teams with RPIs like that get in. UAB got in. Air Force got in. Air Force got in with an RPI in the 70s, didn't they? One year.
Yeah,
granted, they were in a multi bid league though, but. The other night we had Jerry Palm on, and he was lamenting over the inclusion of Middle Tennessee. Well, Middle Tennessee, categorically, outright first place finisher, top 50 RPI, those are the teams that always get in. I mean, I can only think of one case where an outright first place finisher was in the RPI top 50 and didn't get in, and that was Missouri State the year Quanzo Martin was there. You're looking at Wilmington, if they win out, being the kind of team that does get selected far more often than not.
Let's move over to Conference USA here.
Oh.
I know you don't want to, David. Maybe we'll just do it real quickly here, where we've got UAB, Middle Tennessee, and the Southland Conference. Actually, a big game coming up this weekend. UAB is going to be at Middle Tennessee. And UAB does have something fairly unique on their profile, though. We were discussing this in emails the other day, but UAB is currently undefeated against the top 100 RPI.
Right, and I mean, doesn't that land them 7-8 range? Maybe even higher.
Are they going to have to beat Middle Tennessee this weekend to stay there? Because Middle Tennessee is in the 70s.
Well, okay, the problem is you don't want to beat Middle Tennessee and then ruin your top 100 win.
And you also want to hope that Auburn, Illinois, and Virginia Tech don't go on winning streaks either.
Yeah, we're obviously talking about this. As we sit here right now, UAB has played one top 100 team. It was their home win over Middle Tennessee. That's they have five sub-100 losses. Clearly, we're looking at 14-line, if not 15-line, for the Conference USA champion this year. I think maybe the worst season I've seen out of Conference USA in a long time. They've had some bad years.
And we, and by we, I mean predominantly me, but I think you've agreed, have hammered SFA, who we'll talk about later, for their incredibly weak schedules and how they do nothing other than prove they can beat sub-200 teams. UAB's overall strength of schedule, are you ready for the 285? They're out of conference strength of schedule, 302. This is SFA. This is that's who they are. They've proven they can beat sub-200 teams.
Well, the good news is they beat SFA this year. So let's move on to the Horizon League, where we have another team that suffered a bad loss that I believe has killed their at-large chances completely. They must get in through the automatic bid now, sitting here with three sub-150 losses, the Valparaiso Crusaders. And the worst one here, this was their only loss at home so far, and it was to a Wright State team that is not a very good team, but they just can't figure this Wright State team out this year. John, do you agree with me that we're done with Valpo at this point?
Yeah, they couldn't figure out Wright State, but Oakland certainly figured out how to beat the Raiders on President's Day, and that was in Dayton.
This is kind of amazing when you look at their profile here. That in eye test wise, they go to Rhodey and win, and Rhodey's been kind of disappointing. That happened right after the injury. We were expecting more out of them, so we don't value that win as much as we probably did at the time.
Iona win we loved, though. I mean, at that point, we thought Iona was the best team in the Metro Atlantic, and they pounded them.
Yeah, and again, Iona's looked pretty miserable since then. They go to Oregon, play really well there. They had a chance to win that game. It wasn't until well after the last under four that Oregon really opened it up. They go to Oregon State, and again, Oregon State had to come back to get it as close as it was. Ball State, you kind of scratched your head about that, but Ball State's got a gaudy home record. You expected them to win at Valpo. They didn't. They have been blowing past virtually everyone in this conference except Wright State. It makes no sense that they would struggle with a team that really isn't anything special. And even when they lost at Wright State, you're like, well, okay, Wright State only has one home loss. They just had an off night. I think this killed them. I think Wright State absolutely killed Valpo's at-large chances. I don't know, and I like this Valpo team. I think if they can get into the NCAA tournament, and it looks like they're going to have to win the Horizon League tournament to do it, I think they're good enough to where they can take somebody down in the round of 64. I mean, they're really good, but the rules work for the same for the under-the-radar teams. You need to get big wins, and you need to avoid bad losses. And they have not avoided the bad losses, and that's going to keep them out without the automatic.
Now, I also have some more good news and bad news as it relates to Valpo. The good news is the way the conference bracket is shaping up right now, Wright State is going to be on the Oakland side of the bracket. The bad news, it's going to be in Oakland's backyard or next-door neighbor.
And on top of that, Detroit is looking like they could be in the 4-5 range of this conference, which means Valpo would get a bye to the semifinals. They could have to play Detroit and Oakland as their two games to win the conference tournament, both of the games being played in Detroit. So
it's a crime what they have done with the format of this conference. Not to make excuses for Valpo, because if you don't like it, then play your way inside the bubble. I totally understand that, but I'm also realistic. This is a conference. If you're one of the 23 under-the-radar conferences, you should not have a predetermined conference tournament site.
Let's go over to the Ivy League. If you want to talk about the conference that is, for now, doing it as right as you could possibly do it and just giving the automatic bid to the regular season champion, that's the Ivy League. And it may change.
Well, then there's no bubble. So the only thing about this, and we have this discussion all the time, The only thing I don't like about this is that there's no incentive to play your way inside the bubble because you don't need to because there's no tournament. Anyway.
Yeah, but Yale sitting here undefeated, one of now two teams left in the country that are undefeated within their conference. Princeton a game back after a thriller game against Columbia last weekend. Really was a great game, but they pulled it out.
Maybe
the end of things here for Columbia. Columbia will need help now. Yale at Princeton coming up Friday night. If Yale wins that, they may just cruise to the Ivy League title. If Princeton wins it, we could be in a battle here, and Columbia could still sneak back into things.
Yeah, if you want to talk about unbalanced scheduling in the Ivy, Yale had, I think, five of their first six games all at home, so they're finishing up with seven of their final eight games on the road.
This Yale-Princeton, yeah, that's a good point, John, which, I mean, and again, with some of the rivalries, somebody may step up and get them. This Yale-Princeton game, is it on television, or do we know yet?
Actually, it is not being televised, which kind of surprises me, given its importance, unless ESPN adds it to the ESPN3 stream at the last minute, which they've done before in the Ivy League. So,
right now,
if you don't have the Ivy League Digital Network package,
get the Ivy League Digital Network.
Get it, but you may not be able to watch the game.
Yeah. The other thing, you know, with Princeton with an RPI in the 40s, Yale RPI 58, getting back to what I said earlier about Wilmington, if one of these teams is an outright first-place finisher and they have a top 40, I think they're going in the field.
Yeah, well, I mean, the difference here, obviously, is that they're in the field automatically.
Anyway, let
me throw one thing out here, though. Princeton has one of the more interesting discrepancies in power rating numbers. 39 the RPI. The BPI has them at 84. That is a very large discrepancy. And there's actually a reason for that, because the BPI is the rating that takes into account playing a team with injuries. And Princeton has five wins this season over teams that were not playing at full strength out of their 16 wins. So I think their RPI is overinflated at 39 also.
Sorry,
Princeton fans.
Had they been able to beat St. Joe's on the road, I think they would at least have a case, but pretty hard to make a case without that win.
Metro Atlantic, one team that thankfully, I guess for us under the radar fans, did not suffer a loss this past week. And knock on wood, they've got a few games coming up, including hosting Monmouth on Friday night. I'm sorry, hosting Iona on Friday night. The Monmouth Hawks, though, 22-5 overall, 14-2.
What in the world? Warren!
Oh, my, Warren.
Okay. He's showing edge.
We are now NC-17, folks.
Warren Nolan advertising.
Oh, God bless Warren Nolan for making that site free.
That was not planned, by the way.
NSFW for the HD podcast. Okay, folks.
Right. For those of you listening, it's a shame you're not watching. anyway, the standings here.
Metro Atlantic. There it comes again. Monmouth in first place, and also apparently selling mail order brides, maybe? I don't know. I didn't quite read the whole ad, but yeah.
Tim Kloos is not going to be happy.
This team here is still sitting here with six top 100 wins, two of them top 50, five of those six wins away from home, probably more wins away from home than anybody in the country. I haven't actually added it up, David, but it might be.
Let me see what it is. It's, they've got 14. Which is, because they got the 12 true road wins and then two on a neutral court.
Yeah, 14 route wins away from home, a huge number, a chance for one more at St. Peter's and up to three more in the conference tournament as well. So,
grand total of 14-5 away from home.
Right.
I mean, the only blemish, of course, they have three very bad losses at Canisius, at Army, and at Manhattan. We discussed them with Jerry Palm on Monday night, whether he thought they could sustain another bad loss. And It will be interesting if they lose to anybody other than Siena. It will be a sub-150 loss, including Iona on Friday night. So,
yeah, and the thing is, with the conference tournament, and we mentioned this the other night as well, being at Siena, Siena only one home loss, granted to Monmouth, but it's assuming a lot that they're going to be able to go up there and win. But like you said, three out of their four remaining games are at home. Monmouth has not lost at home. They haven't really come close to losing at home, have they?
Not really. They've pretty much rolled at home. And the, you know, the thing with this Monmouth team, I'm just checking some scores here. Yeah, the closest game I think was 83-72 or 79-70. I mean, even Siena, they beat 85-69. I think if they lose to Siena in the Metro Atlantic tournament, whether it's semifinals or finals, it doesn't really matter. I think they're in. It's if they lose to anybody else, and especially if they suffer two losses in both in the Metro Atlantic tournament and one of these four regular season games, that I really start worrying about this team.
Right. And unlike that USC team that you mentioned, I think it was 2011. Monmouth has only played 8 home games all year, and that's right. Metro Atlantic plus Wagner, which may wind up winning the Northeast Conference anyhow.
Yeah, and I just really like them. Big game coming up this Friday. This one should be fun with Iona, the return. But they really – how would they have been out had they lost that Ryder game? Because they really looked bad. They took – I mean, it was just a stampede of ill-advised shot after ill-advised shot. They forced up shot after shot after shot, and you just wanted to yell at the television, there's 30 seconds on the shot clock. Where's the fire?
I have no idea, Dave, because they were down 12 or 16 points or whatever it was with 4 minutes left, and I turned the game off.
14.
Lost it. 14 points, 4 minutes left. And I woke up the next morning, honestly, and looked at the scoreboard, and I said, wait, that's not the game I watched, is it? What's going on here? They won the game. I went back, read up on it. Amazing comeback. I wish I'd seen it. But let's go. Let's keep things moving here. We've got a lot of conferences still to cover here. Mid-American, Akron, another team that that we were really starting to get high on, suffers the loss at Northern Illinois. A Northern Illinois team that we were also liking earlier in the season, so it's not crazy that they lost at Northern Illinois. We've really worked promoting, you know, this job that Northern Illinois has done turning around that program. But right. Akron's still with a 2-game lead in the conference. I just don't think they have any at-large chances left at this point.
Yeah, well, again, I mean, here they are right on the cusp. Their RPI is 41. So categorically, they're still the kind of team that would have a chance at it there. But
well, they do have Kent State twice left and Ohio at home. Those are three teams right around the 100 mark on the RPI, so they will help those numbers get better if they can win out. Again, yeah. As I mentioned, they do have Kent State twice, and Kent State is still, in my opinion, the second-best team in this conference. And yeah. I don't think they can sweep those two games, honestly.
Right. But, I mean, if they win out, I think they're going to get a serious look. I mean, we talk about looking at Hawaii. I like this team more. I just think that they had kind of an off night that night. You know, if you look at their profile here, it's, you know, it's the one thing is the lack of quality wins, but the RPI is healthy, 6 true road wins. I could make a case for them if I really had to. I think it's easier to argue for them than it is to argue for Hawaii.
Why aren't you scrolling over, David?
I'm starting to think that those are like Google ads or something. It's because of the websites I've been looking at.
Let me also add here for Akron while we go over that. They're not going to have the benefit of a ladder format this year like they've had in previous years for the MAC. But the good thing for the Zips is it's still going to be pretty close to their backyard up in Cleveland.
Right. Well, it's pretty close to a lot of these teams' backyards, given that the amount of Ohio schools in the MAC and Buffalo, not that far either. But let's move over to the MEAC, John, and let me throw this one over to you because Dave and I haven't figured out what to discuss in this conference yet this season. So, John, tell us about the MEAC.
Well, as I mentioned, I think the last time I was on here, South Carolina State was a pleasant surprise who would creep closer to the top of the conference after winning at Hampton and couple weeks later, here they still are within a game of first place, but it's still going to go through Hampton, and this is probably going to be a conference that also has two or three possible centenary candidates this year.
Well, I'll tell you that it's kind of interesting here. Looking at the standings, you currently have two games in the loss column separating 5th place from 13th place. So could be some crazy battles for the top for seeding, at least, over the last few weeks. But this is definitely a single-bid conference, always is. Probably playing for a slot in Dayton unless some crazy things happen. And the top seed, which would likely be Hampton, wins the conference tournament. But let's go.
I don't think it's going to make much of a difference whether Hampton or anyone else wins. It's probably going to be a 16 seed who may or may not be going to Dayton.
Let's go over to the Missouri Valley, though, where Wichita State is back from being back to under the radar from being not under the radar. Another team with some interesting disparity in their power ratings. RPI is 49. KenPom has them as the number 12 team in the country, though. And if you go by KenPom, this is a solid tournament team that should be edging off towards a protected seed. If you go by the RPI and go by what Jerry Palm told us the other night, this team is a bubble team that if they don't win the Missouri Valley Conference, may not be dancing at all.
Yeah, if you look at their overall offensive rating, I'm seeing number 79, but overall defensive rating, number 2 in the country right now. So that's why their KenPom ratings would be that high.
Number 2 behind Valpo, who's number 1. But David, Wichita State, I mean, do you agree with Jerry that they must win the automatic bid?
Not necessarily. He made a really good case for that, but the thing about him is I just think that if they win out, you're talking – I think winning out will be enough. Now, I think anything shy of that when I say win out, I think they need to win out to at least the semis. Then I think they'll get in. But anything shy of that, they'll probably need the automatic bid. But I don't know. They don't have any really outstanding wins, but they have a lot of okay ones. Like the win at Southern Illinois is okay. The win at Northern Iowa is okay. And again, like one of the teams that beat them, well, they had beaten them earlier this year, and they'd beat them on their court. And Northern Iowa at home isn't bad. They had the win over North Carolina at home. They're 8-3 at home. It's not a bad win there. So if I had to guess, I think if they win out, they're okay.
I agree with you, but let's see. Let's first of all see if they can win these last four regular season games, and then we can talk a little more about them. Over the Northeast Conference, another conference that has become a free-for-all with two games in the loss column separating first place from seventh place. Central Connecticut and Bryant look like they will be the two teams that do not make the conference tournament unless Bryant makes a huge run here late. But four-way tie for first: Wagner, Fairleigh Dickinson, SFPA, Mount St. Mary's.
Right.
I mean,
Sacred Heart right in the mix too.
I think we're in for a great last 2 weeks here in this conference, which is always, even if the conference tournament champion is going to be going to Dayton to play in the first four, this is just such a fun conference to watch.
It is, and the venues, we had the game the other day between Long Island and St. Francis Brooklyn, and it actually had some stakes when you look at the conference tournament because, again, with home court advantage, both teams trying to play their way under the top four and at least get a quarterfinal game. But I love this conference. I love the venues. I love the atmospheres. I love the rivalries. It's the city conference. They call the other one the Metro Atlantic, but I mean, look at how metro some of these schools are.
Yeah. Over in the Ohio Valley, John, let me turn to you from this conference here. Conference that we thought one team would run away with all season, that was Belmont. As we stand here right now with three games left for most of these teams, four for Tennessee State, we've got Belmont and Tennessee Tech tied at 10-3, Tennessee State 9-3, and Belmont may not even get that buy into the semifinals that comes with winning the East Division.
Yeah, it was easy to overlook the first loss after Belmont lost to Tennessee Tech over in Cookeville. But then the Eastern Kentucky loss, things started to unravel a bit for the Bruins. And this has not been one of the Colonel's better years.
They've now lost three out of the last five games, losing at Morehead State, another disappointing loss. And David, do we need to start talking about this Tennessee State team maybe even, or Tennessee Tech? I was reading actually a nice article about this Tennessee State team and what a turnaround this program has been this year.
Yeah, it is a huge turnaround. It is a really good story. And, I mean, they're right there. I think, how do you not talk about them? I mean, the way they've been going, they've won three straight. They got a chance to finish in first and get the bye to the semis and then play it in their home city. They won four of their last five, and they closed the season. How much fun is this? Against Belmont at home in the game that could determine who buys into the semis.
Yeah. I know coaches don't put much stock in moral victories, but how improved have the Tigers been since their near miss at Tennessee?
Good. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Absolutely. Let's keep rolling things here over into the Patriot League, where everyone is maybe finally starting to catch up with Bucknell, whose lead is now down to a game over Boston University and Lehigh. I mean, another conference that always has fun games, but this Bucknell team, who was starting to run away with it, losers of 3 out of 5, actually did win tonight to break a 3 out of 4 losing streak. But
right.
They're hosting BU, they're at Lafayette and at Navy. I don't know that they can go 3-0 there. So,
yep.
And a lot of the line here, David, this is another conference where the conference tournament is played on home courts.
Lots on the line. And then, you got Boston U winning 7 in a row. They played tonight. I forget what they did, though.
Boston University did play tonight. They did pick up the victory by 3 points at home over Colgate, yes.
Yeah, up on the roof. Love the roof.
Oh, yeah, the power of the roof. Yeah. I think they learned their lesson 2 years after they played the conference championship game in Agganis against, who was it, American?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, again, we need all games on the roof this year, 7 wins in a row. And, again, they've gone on the road to get some of these. You know, they went to Navy. They went to Loyola. I like the way Boston U is playing right now.
Speaking of former BU guys that are now been lighting it up in other places, how about Maurice Watson Jr. for Creighton, even though this is under the radar?
Right.
Wouldn't the Terriers love to have him right now?
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Let's keep things moving here, but I'll move over to the Southern Conference, where another team that suffered a disappointing loss. Yeah, I still think this team, if they don't lose again until the SoCon Championship game, should be in the field, in my opinion. That's this Chattanooga Mocs. Sitting here still 23-4 overall. They've got 4 more regular season games, 3 out of the 4 being at home. The road game is at VMI. You figure they got to win their quarterfinals and the semifinals. That would be 6 more wins. That put them at 29-5. Isn't that a tournament profile, 27-5 against D1?
Yeah, RPI in the 30s, and if they win out, it might even get higher than that. Really strong out-of-conference strength, RPI, strength of schedule,
The win at Dayton is as good as any win of these under-the-radar schools that we would be talking about for the bubble.
Right, and anybody else for the bubble, too, for that matter. Now, the thing is, this is the kind of profile that, categorically speaking, they're the ones that get selected. It's better than Middle Tennessee's was. It's better than UAB's was. They've got the one really good win. Their RPI's in the 30s. They would be an outright first-place team. This is the kind of team that typically gets in.
I think the biggest knock I would have on this profile, and John, you can disagree with me if you want here, but would be if you do lose in the conference tournament, it's not like some of these other conferences where there is another team in the top hundreds, like you have Siena for Monmouth, where at least it's not an awful, awful looking loss. Everybody's sub 100. I mean, maybe East Tennessee State at around the 120s is the best loss they can suffer, and because of how bad of a loss it will be, even in the conference tournament finals, making it their 4th sub 100 loss, that's my only hesitation there.
I would think that the best case scenario would probably be if East Tennessee State falls to, let's say, the number 4 seed, where Chattanooga at least beats them in the semifinals and loses to, let's say, Furman in the championship. That's probably the only scenario I could see where the SoCon gets 2 bids, but even that's a long shot.
Well, how close was Wofford last year? Because I know they were on the 12 line. And the first 4 was on the – they weren't inside the first 4 because the first 4 was both on the 11 line. But
that's how close they were.
Last year's Wofford team. And that Wofford team was close.
Yeah. Well, we have one other team that besides Yale that's undefeated in their conference, and that's Stephen F. Austin, as always. Seems to be a broken record here. 12-0, 19-5 overall, 101 RPI, 273 strength of schedule. Enjoy your 15 seed, 14 seed at your best shot. Disagree? Yeah.
No, I agree completely. It's not easy. Five of their last six games are on the road, but again, they're all against – I checked, and this is true, Chad, they're all against Southern teams, Southern Conference teams.
Southern Conference teams?
No, I mean Southland teams.
Against Southland teams. Are you sure they're not against Conference USA teams?
I checked, and no. And, three of their last six are against sub-300 teams,
okay.
Also known as
– And I'm going to go with 15-5 once we take out Our Lady of the Shallow Lake and their other non-D1 wins.
Yeah, they aren't likely to lose again. They'll probably win out all the way through the conference tournament.
Right.
I've seen them play a couple times. The game at Corpus Christi, I know it finished close, but they were pretty much in control that whole game.
Yeah, I mean, Houston Baptist actually hung with them, even though that was a bigger margin when they played at Houston Baptist. But they have pretty much dominated this conference. They have not really had a close game.
Right. And they led Houston Baptist by as much as 15, confusing it with another game. I know they came back on them, but
yeah. I mean, I would circle the home game against Houston Baptist, maybe the road game at Incarnate Word, and of course the road game to end the season at Sam Houston State for the possible losses. Sam Houston State more so because that is their top rival in the conference.
Right.
Let's move over to the SWAC, just very quickly. Texas Southern 2-game lead, despite the fact they did lose that baffling game to Prairie View, but we're just playing for a shot here to go to Dayton. Southern has the best RPI in the conference, best overall record, but also has a 345 strength of schedule, so probably they're going to Dayton also.
Which is amazing when you consider like how these teams like to schedule all those bye games, but wow.
Yeah. Prairie View is another strange team here in that they're 3-9 in their conference. They're in ninth place, but they've beaten both the Texas Southern and Southern, who are the top two teams in the conference.
Yep. One of the rare years where the SWAC really is not in contention for the Centenary Award. But one of the notes just here is Alcorn State, who's tied with Southern for second place, will be allowed to play in the SWAC tournament, but they are on the APR ban list. So if they do win it, if they do make it to the SWAC tournament championship game, we'll have another meaningless SWAC championship game like we had last year. And although we do have the possibility for the double court storming where the winner and the loser are both celebrating.
Yeah.
Because in the SWAC, if an ineligible team makes the finals, the team that they beat in the championship game gets the automatic bid. So if Alcorn State makes the finals, whoever they play there will get the automatic bid.
Which they might. I mean, they're way up there. So. Yeah.
Summit League, South Dakota State and Fort Wayne tied for first place. I think we've pretty much written off South Dakota State for an at-large bid. Especially with that Omaha loss. Even though they're still in the top 15 in the RPI, they are not outright first place. They don't have their best road win is at Illinois State. It's just not there. Three sub-150 losses, two more sub-100 losses. At-large bid not really possible here, but still could be a dangerous team. It could be a fun conference tournament.
Yeah, it should be. And I really like this conference. South Dakota State, they're the team I really like the most. They're probably really hot now. I think they've hit their stride, winning six of their last seven, I believe, with the one loss being a game at Omaha that went kind of back and forth. They were right in there. But big game coming up tomorrow, actually, at IPFW. I think those are the two best teams in the league. That one's going to be fun. IPFW, never been in the NCAA tournament. So
correct. It's too bad for the Jackrabbits that TCU and Minnesota have been underwhelming in their conferences because those would be two name wins, but as you mentioned, not as good as the Illinois State win.
Well, again, if TCU and Minnesota were any good, they may not have won those games, John, so you can't really go that far. But let's go over to the Sun Belt. Obviously, Arkansas Little Rock is the only remaining story now that Texas Arlington has completely fallen out of the picture. 22-3 overall still, tied for the fewest losses in the country. RPI towing the 50 line if they keep winning at least and win out through the rest of the regular season and in the semifinals of the Sun Belt tournament. They should be within the top 50 of the RPI as well. We'll have won the conference by a couple of games. Do have a huge game tomorrow night at Georgia State. They do host Arlington at home still, so they've got a few tough games left, though.
Well, here's the thing, though. The best game in the Sun Belt tournament might be that semifinal if Chalk holds right now, because that would be Arkansas Little Rock and Texas Arlington.
Yeah.
That was a game we were hoping for the championship, but we'll probably get it around early if things hold up.
Yeah, Arlington was really surprising this year in the sense that none of us were expecting them to do anything. They've really kind of fallen apart here lately, but still a much better season than expected.
Well, I don't think anyone was expecting Little Rock to do anything. I was looking at Georgia State and Louisiana schools at this conference.
Right, yeah. So kind of, but Little Rock's, I mean, they're a fun team to watch. I'd love to see them get it.
If this were statistics class, we would say that Texas Arlington is regressing back to the mean now.
Right, they certainly are, yes.
West Coast Conference, we're not going to talk Gonzaga or BYU, but we do want to talk a little bit about the St. Mary's teams. We do it every week. I still am seeing some brackets out there, not very many left, but a few brackets out there that are talking about St. Mary's either being in or being with among the top teams out. Four top 100 wins, only when it gets a team within the field is Gonzaga, two sub 100 losses, best road win was 254 Pacific. David, if they win at Gonzaga, if they get the season-ending win at home over the Lopes, if they make it to the West Coast Conference Championship game, those are the ifs. Don't lose again till the West Coast Conference lose there to Gonzaga.
Yeah.
No case.
Maybe. I don't understand what impresses anyone about this team. I mean, when we talk about the other under-the-radar teams that we consider to have blown it, Chattanooga, Little Rock, all these teams that suffered losses last week, Akron, I would rank all of them ahead of St. Mary's. I think if they play on a neutral floor, all those teams absolutely destroy St. Mary's. Valpo, even. I like Valpo better than St. Mary's. At least Valpo went to Oregon State and won.
What's keeping St. Mary's alive is a KenPom rating that's 43, which I think is pretty close to what UCLA had last year. So at least they're within striking distance in terms of the metrics. But
their RPI is 71. If you want to talk metrics, I think you've got to start at the RPI. Mm-hmm. And when your RPI is 71, you say forget it.
Right, yeah.
but let's talk about the final conference here. In the team of the people, the Grand Canyon Antelopes. Ooh, a little bit of a bounce back here. Still a game out of first place, but David, we discussed this with Jerry Palm on Monday night. Have a chance. They went out the rest of their games here to be the first team in the history of the NCAA to finish in the top 100 RPI while being a transitional program.
Yeah, and I mean, they're right there right now at 96. That's a lot to be proud of. Their strength of schedule, not the best, but still, they're a transitional program. They've had a truly historic season. All of their remaining games are certainly winnable, although they do go to Cal State Bakersfield. That one's going to be tough.
And to St. Mary's.
Yeah, they will be in, all kidding aside, I mean, we still want the waiver, Lopes waiver. They will be in a postseason tournament, probably the CIT, and I think they can do very well in it. I think they might be able to win it.
This is a very dangerous game for the Gales, though, if they want to harbor any at-large hopes.
St. Mary's can't lose that game if they want to make the NCAA tournament.
But at-large. I think they will. I think Grand Canyon will get them.
And as far as the CIT goes, absolutely, Lopes fans, we are not going to be done with them after March 5th when their regular season finale at Utah Valley. We will be just following them in the CIT, so pay attention to the website. But let's, on that note, I guess other than the WAC, New Mexico State in first place, it looks like they're going to probably be cruising to the regular season championship once again here. I believe that they're done playing with playing Bakersfield as well for the season. Oh no, they do play. Actually, they host Bakersfield tomorrow night. Their final match of those two teams. They win that one, they'll have a 2-game lead over Bakersfield and pretty much in control for the one seed in the conference tournament.
Yeah.
Let's quickly look at some preview of some upcoming games. I know we're almost out of time, and then do our top 10 lists. A few games of note coming up tomorrow night, Thursday night. We mentioned the NGIT at North Florida game. They mentioned the UNC Wilmington at William & Mary game. A couple games in the Northeast Conference. Two of those first-place teams, Wagner and Fairleigh Dickinson, will be matching up. In the Big South, Coastal Carolina's at Winthrop. Arkansas Little Rock's at Georgia State. South Dakota State's at Fort Wayne. The Lopes will be hosting UMKC tomorrow night. And yeah. St. Mary's on the road at Portland. They lose that game, forget it, obviously.
Yeah.
But I'm really excited about Friday night, actually. We've got a triple header on ESPNU. Three games here. I guess they're not all on ESPNU, but 6 o'clock, ESPNU, Akron at Kent State.
That's a
maybe
big one.
The best rivalry in the MAC, which is full of great rivalries as
the
well.
The wagon wheel.
Right.
Yale at Princeton, we mentioned. Then at 10 p.m., Iona at Monmouth. So it's going to be a fun Friday night for Under the Radar fans.
Yeah, well, I hope Tim Kloos is back on Twitter this week because that would be hilarious.
Coming up Saturday, another great rivalry actually here, Army and Navy, the second time for the season. It's coming up on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
On the Patriot League. A couple other games. Tennessee Tech at Belmont. The two of the three first-place teams in the OVC will be going head-to-head.
Yeah, and that's huge because of the ladder format at stake there.
Yep. NJIT's at Jacksonville. The other, the NJIT sweeps this road trip to North Florida, Jacksonville. They're going to win that conference. That's it.
They are. And then the conference tournament is on their court. That wonderful, awesome former people's court.
it will be fun. Those fans will go. That place is as loud as it gets, honestly.
It is. Oh, it's special there. Oh, man.
St. Mary's at Gonzaga, we mentioned. Hawaii at Irvine, we also mentioned, coming up late Saturday night. That's the 11:30 game. It's a late game as well. Sunday, BU at Bucknell, the top two teams in the Patriot League. So there's one to tune in for.
Yeah.
And UAB at Middle Tennessee State, the game of the year in the Conference USA.
Yeah, and again, UAB hosting the conference tournament, albeit not on campus, but still, the right to wear white.
Let's quickly run through our top 10 lists. I'll run through my top 5 teams. The two of you can comment and tell me who you would have there. But my top 5 to start are Monmouth number 1, Wichita number 2, Chattanooga 3, Little Rock 4, and UNC Wilmington coming in this week at number 5.
I think I agree with those 5, and I think I agree with the order.
John?
I would probably have Akron ahead of Wilmington.
Okay. I had Akron at number 7, with Valpo in between them at number 6.
I would have gone more according to my own seed list. I would have actually gone Monmouth, Little Rock, Chattanooga, Valpo, and kind of an unpopular pick, but St. Mary's.
You wouldn't have Wichita even in your top 5?
Oh, I wouldn't have.
I would have them number 6.
Okay, I would not have had St. Mary's in my list at all. What I would have done below Akron at 7. Number 8, I've got this Yale team. I love the way they're playing right now.
If they win at Princeton, I will be a believer.
This was a team that I had at number 5 until they lost tonight. It dropped all the way down to number 9. I have Stony Brook. I do still think they're top 10, but because this would have been an incredible win tonight.
Oh, it would have been, yeah.
And at number 10, I have my other Ivy League team, the Princeton Tigers, sneaking in there. I know that that's a little bit here, but I do have our Go Tigers here.
Props.
I did give a couple honorable mentions, two St. Mary's, Hawaii, the team of the Big West. The Lopes always get an honorable mention. And I think we've got to give an honorable mention to Stephen F. Austin just for being undefeated in their conference.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I would have given an honorable mention to Yale for the time being simply because their schedule has been so front-loaded in the Ivy, but I suspect that's going to go up as league play goes on.
Well, who else would you have in, John, at the end of your bracket then?
Well, my final 4 teams would have been Stony Brook, Akron, Wilmington, and South Dakota State.
Wait, he just said that Stony Brook, Akron, Wilmington, and South Dakota State are in the final 4?
No, I'm just talking about my top 10.
That's
wow, that is.
But you had South Dakota State in there. I guess that's one team we didn't mention.
Correct. I would have had Hofstra just below the Jackrabbits.
All right. Well, David, any other thoughts about the top 10 there?
No, I mean, I pretty much, I agree with the order. I really like... My final thought is that I really it was kind of disappointing last Thursday and Friday to see all these teams that you figured would land inside the bubble if they just held serve, not hold serve. I do think that a lot of these teams can still get a look. I certainly think Little Rock can. I certainly think Chattanooga can. I think Wilmington can if they win out. And I even think Akron can. So it's not over yet. And these are teams that if they do get inside the bubble or win the automatic bid could really, really give somebody a big game in that round of 64.
John, do you have any final thoughts for the evening?
Something that we'll probably get into a little more detail tomorrow. We're going to start going into our survival board and may or may not have eliminations that have nothing to do with APR or postseason bans, but rather failure to qualify, as is the case in, the Ohio Valley Conference coming up.
Yeah,
actually, we'll keep an eye out for a pillow fight between SIU Edwardsville and Southeast Missouri State tomorrow.
Yes, actually, thanks for mentioning that, John. We actually are guaranteed to lose at least one, as many as three teams off the survival board tomorrow night. A few more could be falling off Friday night out of the Ivy League. So start keeping an eye on that. We'll talk about it again tomorrow night, next week, and as we get into championship week. These are teams that are in conferences that don't allow everybody into the conference tournament and are actually going to be mathematically eliminated, or for the Ivy League, teams that
can't finish
that can't finish first. My final thought here is very simply that we want to thank everybody for joining us and thank everybody for tuning in for our wonderful presentation of FloorCam tonight.
Yes.
Because this is the way that college basketball is meant to be broadcast. Meant to be seen from the floor. Next game that I go to, John and I are going to head up to a St. Paul Xavier game. I intend to be lying down on the floor watching that game.
Right.
On that note, thanks again for joining us, everybody, and have a great evening.